This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's the Hoffman Show right here on the Team 980. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. The youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham, taking you up to 7 o'clock with the NFL Scouting Combine coming up next week. Wanted to talk to one of the experts who'll be out there in Indy sorting through all the rumors, our pal Mike Sando of The Athletic.
You can give him a follow on the old X app at Sando_NFL. Mike, I appreciate you making some time for us, my friend.
Good to be here. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Feeling a lot better about the local 53, the Washington Commanders, after the salary cap increase was announced today. Mike, your tweet on this actually got audible chuckle out of me. What did you make of the cap rising, and how do you think it helps teams, if it does?
Well, it definitely helps to have it go up. You know, I think it probably went up a little bit more than they expected, so that's welcome news. I think if you're a team that's right around the limit, and you're going to have maybe a little bit less maneuvering to do, right? There could be a handful of teams like that. But what I tweeted about it, though, was, hey, do you remember the last time, you know, that it made a record jump? Where were you? And you don't really remember, because as exciting as it seems to be when it happens, maneuvering the cap is not the hard thing to do. It's finding the right players to pay. Yeah. So even as we go into free agency now, the cap issues really aren't the big concern. It's that there's not enough good players available to feel great about what you're going to pay them, even if you have more cap room. So as long as you have good players, the cap never is a problem. Look, the Eagles have they're pretty highly leveraged. They have good players. The Saints are pretty highly leveraged. They don't have good players. That's why the Saints have a problem.
Right.
They have a cap problem, yes, but it's a player problem. If their bad contracts were in good players, they wouldn't be bad contracts.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's just a thing to keep in mind is, you know, the cap gets used as a reason, as an excuse by owners or what they're doing or not. But it's, if you know how to get good players, you can pay them.
So Mike, let me ask you this, because I see the common thing that people assume, and I'm sure they're right in this assumption, is that it's going to drive some of the costs of these players up. Which position group do you think gets most impacted by the increase in the salary cap?
That's really just – you mean of players that are already signed?
No, I mean of like in free agency. It's going to drive some of these numbers up.
Yeah,
which position group do you think gets influenced the most?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know that – I don't think there's good players out there. I mean, look, we all think T. Higgins is on the list. Is he going to make it?
Yeah, right.
They may just tag him, right? So
right.
I think that the running back position in general has been depressed their numbers actually went down for a while. The franchise tag numbers actually got lower at one point. So I think that's one that we'll see grow. Off of some of the success some of those backs have had, but it depends who's available as well. So I think it's very case-by-case basis on the player. I don't know that a position's going to necessarily have a big run on it. We saw last year, like interior offensive linemen, some of those guys hit and got big money. So we could see, we could potentially see that again. There were guys making $20 million a year who played guard. So we'll see what happens. Kansas City has a guard who may, and Trey Smith, who may hit the market. So we could see a few like that. But, you know, I don't think that this is a big enough change to just, you know, reset everything.
Mike, one thing I've been asking our local audience here in D.C. is just how we view this Commanders offseason coming up. Third most cap space in the NFL, Mike, but you've got 29 unrestricted free agents. And if I'm being real, for them to overhaul the roster and retool it on the fly the way that they did last year, a lot of those contributors that you saw in the NFC title game were on one-year deals. You couple that with getting an elite guy at the quarterback position. I guess I'm asking, Mike, is last year's offseason success replicable for Washington when you think about how many one-year guys that they ultimately brought in?
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to try to do the exact same thing. I think what was interesting about Washington was, they came in to a situation where you could have decided, hey, we've got a long runway here. We can build this thing through the draft. And, of course, they're going to try to do that, and they've had some good draft picks. But they also signed a lot of veterans to sort of raise their floor, if that makes sense. Not everybody does that. Right. So I think that showed that, hey, they wanted to be good right away, and they were. So, now some of those guys are obviously going to be one-year rentals, or some of them won't be there. But I think you can still try to fill with some more of those types of guys. Probably fewer of them because they'll keep some of those guys that run one-year deals. Right. But I could see them, continuing to try to, maximize their ability to win now, especially now that they know Jaden Daniels is a good quarterback. I mean, they hoped they were going to get a good quarterback in the draft, but they didn't probably know how good it would go.
Right. So do you anticipate them being aggressive in terms of spending when you consider the needs and then the free agent market when the league year opens up here in a couple of weeks?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think they were aggressive last year, but not in pushing the market with huge deals. They signed a lot of guys for more moderate deals. And I think we saw them show some restraint at other positions, where people thought they might trade for this or that. They didn't always do that. I would not think that they're going to go wild in free agency. Is there someone you see out there that you think could be a huge high-dollar addition for them?
It's interesting. I know wide receiver 2 is a spot that a lot of the fans here, Mike, want them to spend at. But I look at the Final Four and why those teams were there. It's because of the dominance on the interior on both sides of the football, improving in the trenches. I look at this offensive line class in free agency. Mike, is an interesting group. You mentioned Trey Smith being at the top of the class. I don't think Baltimore's got the resources to keep Ronnie Stanley around. I look at Alaric Jackson out of L.A. with the Rams, Will Fries with Indianapolis. There seems like there are a lot of – and those guys that I listed too, Mike, are like 26, 27 years of age. I always have the old adage of like, well, they're free agents for a reason. So there's obviously some question marks and injuries with some of those guys. But I do expect them to be aggressive in trying to upgrade the trenches on both sides of the football, and I would say this free agent class, lends itself to that.
That would make sense for them. I think a lot of people, you're right, last year thought, would they trade for a receiver, this sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. I think you start in the trenches. That being said, I thought their offensive line was one of the real pleasant surprises So this past season, and that could just be how they decided to play as well. The scheme, they were so pass-happy the year before, just almost historically so, that probably put their line in a bad light. I think the line, we weren't talking about the line really being a big problem this last year. So obviously the injury in the playoffs, to Cosme hurts. So they need to, do something. But that's where I think you're right. They would probably funnel more of the resources there. Usually when you're building a team, that's what you try to get squared away first. And then you think about adding the wide receiver as sort of the cherry on top of the sundae. And if you look at like Philadelphia, they've kind of done that. They've had the lines and then they went and got an A.J. Brown, or even 20 years ago, they went and got a Terrell Owens, or even 2 or 3 years ago, five or six, 7 years ago, they got to get the receiver from Chicago. What was his name?
Alshon Jeffrey. Yeah.
Alshon Jeffrey, right? Mm-hmm. You add those pieces to a team that's already pretty good, right? as opposed to add those pieces and then go about building your team.
Right. I like the way you describe it. Sort of like a cherry on the top. It would be Washington's cherry this year, and also a foundational piece is if they could somehow, Mike, pry Myles Garrett away from Cleveland. Based on folks you talk to around the league, is Andrew Berry in that front office going to play hardball with Myles Garrett? Do you see this being something that drags into the new league year, maybe even almost the camp, or do we get a resolution here sooner rather than later?
I can see it dragging that long. Yeah, I can see it dragging that long. I mean, if you're an acquiring team, how much are you willing to give up? And then remember, you're going to pay him on a long-term deal for years 9, 10, 11, and 12, right?
Yeah.
So that's a consideration. Like, what would the price be? I'm also very interested in what Cleveland themselves do just to help the quarterback situation. I think that's part of the reason why people are a little antsy and restless in Cleveland is that, man, it's just, they've been going nowhere at quarterback for so long that these guys see their careers sort of draining away. If they can resolve that, you know, get themselves a quarterback that makes it feel more viable, I mean, maybe they're in a better position to, you know, extend Myles Garrett. I guess we don't really know yet because the push has not come to shove to see who's how serious about what, right? Including what other teams might do, what another team might offer them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating. You continue to hear, you know, two in a young player in terms of what the cost of getting Garrett is going to be. I think he's worth it, Mike. I know the age is kind of a factor to how much longer do you have with him, but when you think about the great athletes, no matter what sport that it is, that have went on and beat Father Time, so to speak, when I look at the build and work ethic and injury history of Myles Garrett, I think he's a safe bet to say, yeah, if he's maybe one of those guys.
Yeah, so I actually studied that recently and looked at there's a short list of guys, maybe about a dozen guys who, like him, have been an All-Pro at least four times in their fourth through eighth seasons of their careers. And we're not falling off. So it's all Hall of Famers, a bunch of guys. And really, Randy White, who was on the Cowboys, Reggie White, Eagles and Packers, those guys did a really great job of sustaining it. They kept remaining that, you know, that dominant force. Most of the others fell off quite a bit in years 9, 10, 11. They were still good in some cases, but not as truly dominant. So I think you know the Browns are, and you mentioned Andrew Berry, they're an analytical organization. Yeah. So they're going to be studying all of that, projecting all of that. They're going to have additional information that I don't have because they know all of his medicals and they know what his work ethic's like and all of that. So they can make a more fully informed decision. But, you know, don't forget, he's got 2 years left on his contract with no guaranteed money. So I think the contract motive here has to be part of this as well for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I figured that to be the case, but he was pretty adamant about it, you know, out at Radio Row that, like, I want to win and I want to go to a chance to go to a team, rather, where I can compete for a title, but money always
I believe that. You know, I believe that, but, you know, it's always about the money, too. He's not going to come out and say, hey, look, I only got 2 years left here. I need to make a big swing while I'm still perceived to be in my prime. He could never say that, so, you know, but I would think that's part of it.
Joined right now on the Rude Guest Hotline by Mike Sando, who covers the Athletic. Excuse me, who covers the NFL for the Athletic. Give him a follow on the X app at Sando NFL. Two more for you here, rapid fire, Mike. Before we let you go, I appreciate you giving us some time. How do you see the Cooper Kupp situation playing out in LA with the Rams?
I have thought that this was just a prelude to him being released. I wouldn't think another team would want to acquire his contract. You know, I think these are difficult situations when you have kind of a franchise icon, a guy you've won a Super Bowl with. It's hard to have the really honest conversations about, you know, what the truth is here. The Rams aren't real excited about having him back at that number, right?
Yeah,
it was
a little
awkward when he put out on X, you know, his statement. It was a weirdly worded thing about how we've agreed to that they're going to look to trade me. I don't know. I don't know. If the Rams aren't willing to take that contract right now, you know.
Who else is?
That's kind of how I see it ending.
Especially when you consider the Rams are right on the doorstep of being a Super Bowl team. Speaking of that, the Matt Stafford rumors, Mike, don't make a whole lot of sense because of that. I know it was reported earlier today by Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports that L.A. would be interested in listening to offers, but it starts with a first-round pick, obviously. And who is giving up that type of significant capital, Mike, for a quarterback that only maybe has two seasons left at most?
Well, somebody who's got to win in the next two seasons. And I think that's the difference between with the Rams and those other teams is the Rams are kind of made men, you know, like Sean McVay, Les Snead. These guys aren't like worrying about their jobs. They've won the Super Bowl. They've shown they can win, and they've shown they can take big swings and they can hit home runs or they can strike out, and they're not going anywhere. So I think they are the type of organization that can have these types of thoughts like, you know, we could run it back with Stafford, but we're kind of at this point where we do have a young defense and we kind of want to turn it and go a little bit younger. And we've shown an ability, you know, to win. They probably like Jimmy Garoppolo more than people would realize, right?
That's interesting.
Their affinity for him may be greater than, especially the only thing that matters is what Sean McVay thinks on a team like that, right? For about the quarterback. So if McVay feels like, hey, you know what, I think we win this with this guy. If we can get a love our draft process, if we can get a, you know, we just drafted Jared Verse and some other guys who've hit. I'd run it back with Jimmy if we got a one, and we could get another player like that. I think we can win. That's the type of thing they can afford to think because their jobs aren't on the line every year. They can take a long term look if they want to. And so they'd be wise to listen to a team that might make a short-term decision, right? And say, you know what?
For sure.
The Giants, I don't know if they're actually thinking this.
You segued us perfectly. I'll let that be the last thing, Mike, because I know you got to run. Like, the Giants situation is fascinating. No way in hell, Mike, they gave up number 3 overall for Stafford.
Oh, no. I wouldn't think that.
I wouldn't think that either. So maybe we're talking a future first in their second rounder from this year. But how do you view that situation? John Mara was pretty... You know, gave them a vote of confidence. They didn't finish strong. Obviously, they've got, what is it, the number 3 overall pick. Doesn't seem like a situation where they have the time to develop their own franchise quarterback. How do you see that situation playing out?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing because let's just say, what if Joe Shane could offer like a conditional one, but it's a one in the future. So if he loses his job, like the next GM has to worry about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you give up a future one, that's an interesting then component. The Rams know they're getting it, and Joe Shane's like, "Hey, I'm all in for this year anyway. If I lose next year's one, you know,
who cares?
I don't care if I'm not here." You know, now I don't know if ownership would let him do that, but I think the Giants are a weird situation where the owner clearly was conflicted. It's almost like he plugged his nose and stayed the course. You know, he's like, "Yeah, I realize it hasn't worked out. I don't like where we're at, but." I'm not going to blow it up right now. It really wasn't a ringing endorsement. So, you know, that does raise the possibility that you're going to be making some short-term decisions this offseason. We'll see if the owner allows that.
Yeah, it's going to be the fascinating thing up there in the Big Apple. Mike, I appreciate you as always. Wait, real quick. Who did you vote for MVP?
You know, I voted for Lamar Jackson. You know, I was real strong on Lamar for about the first two-thirds of the season. I thought it was like a no-brainer.
Right.
And then I thought Josh Allen did sort of close the gap. I felt like, Lamar started getting a little more help from his defense and that type of stuff. He didn't have that early, and I thought Josh Allen came on strong. But I just felt like, you know, Lamar, the whole body of work, just all the production – and then I thought for so much of the year, he was overcoming really bad defense. Even their kicker, who used to be money, was bad. Like, he was really carrying it, I thought. So who did you have? Did you have a preference?
Yeah, I thought Lamar, just because the numbers were kind of, like, historic in terms of rushing and passing. And, you know, the argument that people kept using is, oh, he's got Derrick Henry. And, I mean, I don't think the cast of weapons for Josh Allen in Buffalo is bad at all.
Also, you know, he's helping Derrick Henry as much as the other way around.
Right,
the backs
exactly.
who play with Lamar really, really benefit. We saw this a little bit with Saquon Barkley, too, to a lesser degree. But when the defense has to worry about the quarterback as a runner, even though Lamar didn't really run that much this year, he scrambled. But people have it so ingrained, like, that you've got to defend him as a runner. I think it totally helps Derrick Henry, probably more than Henry is helped by Lamar.
Look, that's why we're frustrated here
probably
in D.C.
the other way around.
Yeah, look, that's why we're frustrated here in D.C. We got a runner, and our running backs did not exceed those expectations, Mike. I appreciate you giving us some time, man. We'll catch up soon. Enjoy the offseason.
Hey, thank you. You too.
Always love catching up with my guy, Mike Sando, one of the absolute best in the National Football League. Getting us geared up for the Combine next week in Indy. There are going to be plenty of rumors flying around. And we just got to pay attention and listen, man. Big thank you to Mike Sando. Big thank you to Joe DeLeon. Big thank you to Ant and your calls. Sitting in here for Craig Hoffman. Back with you tomorrow, live out of Cap One Arena for Wizards and Bucks, their first game out of the All-Star break. We'll talk a lot about the Washington Wizards, including what Brian Keefe should do with the rotation now that Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton are going to be a part of the party. Appreciate you all.